to the time when they're actually obligated to fast. The Gemara describes, you know, the shiurim. In other words, you do it in stages. Let's say at first it's not maybe that they fast for 12 hours, then you increase it a little bit and so on. Okay? But I remember I was so eager to start. I think at the age of 10 I was already fasting on the kippah, and of course I still remember, you know, my father is like, yeah, hey, mess, you know.
But it's pasnes.
Right. He used to bring a piece of cake for me in the show to eat. But I insisted, and once I started to do it at that age, so from that point on I fasted, you know, without an interruption. So Ebishter should give me the strength to continue to do so.
Now you have to do it.
Right. So, yeah. So that's part of chinuch. All right. So getting back, you know, to what Tesfos is saying. All right. So the first quote that he does, you know, that he brings from the Gemara in Sukkah is pertaining to tefillin. That when he's old enough to be responsible for wearing tefillin, so then he should begin to do it. Over Kriyishma, Nami Yesh L'chayev Yosef, the stop, right? And we assume also that with Kriyishma too, we have an obligation to start him off at an even earlier age. Mida Ashkechon Hoson, because we find also over there in the Gemara in Sukkah, it says, Koten Hayodele Daber, as soon as a minor knows how to speak, I mean, as soon as a young child can speak, then Ovim Milamde Torah, so he has to teach him Torah. Now what does it mean teach him Torah? Of course it means over here Torah Tzivolonu Moshe Marosha Kilos Yaakov. This is the first Torah that you teach a child, okay, and also the first Pasuk of Krishma. Okay, so that's the case, that's at a much younger age, and so of course that means then, so why is the Mishnah here including in the category Ketanim when in reality we're only talking about Noshim and Avodim so far, right? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right.
This is what bothers Tesfos. So, V'nira l'Rabbeinu Tam, so therefore Rabbeinu Tam comes along and he offers the following explanation. He says, D'mayre b'kotn shalo yigei l'chinuch. Says that the Mishnah here is talking then about a kotn who has not yet reached the age where you are obligated, you know, to train him in how to observe mitzvahs. Nihu sefer, but then says Tesis, how about what we read afterwards? The Kotoni v'chayovim b'tfilo, doesn't it say that they are required to recite Shemone Esrei? So Hoyari Rotsim Leimah, so Ri explained as follows: the Mairei b'Kotni sheigi alechinuch. So the Ri says that it must refer to a minor child, to a Kotni who has already reached the age where he has, you know, to be instructed in Yiddishkeit, because if he had not yet reached that stage in his development, then there would be no obligation to teach him how to say Shemone Esrei. In other words, if a kid, for example, has not yet learned Aleph Beis, okay, he can't read a Siddur yet, you know, he's like some of our Talmud Torah graduates, right? And he can't read. So what are you telling me, that he's obligated, he's excused from saying Krishma, but he's obligated to say Shemone Esrei? But he can't even recite the Shemone Esrei. It's a brech to say to him, you know. Pardon me? Yeah, correct. I mean, it's what we said before. That, you know, the idea of Ovid Malam de Torah, you start in to teach as soon as the child can speak and begin to reason a little bit. So, exactly.
I meant the term part. Of
course.
I read the Shema when I
was
maybe 4 years old.
Right. And we do the same thing with our children and with our Eniklif and so on and so forth. This is what we're trying to do. Absolutely. Like your Yoni, your Avi, your Ari, and so on.
Right away.
There's no question about that. I'm sure Steve is doing the same with his children, and certainly my children, you know, with theirs, and as they gave us, you know. We're all a part of my Faganigan, you know, is the Zeta. Is that when I hear my Enochlip, you know, they can recite Brachas no matter how young, like the youngest one at the moment. More will come, probably. But the youngest one at the moment is Sarah Lisa. So when I was in Israel, that's David's daughter. She was two at the time, okay? So, but it was a pleasure, you know, to hear the way she was saying Krishna at night and so on, and say Amoitzi and things like that. This is what a Yiddish Tata has to do, you know, with his children. No question about that. Or when I was in New York last week, a couple of days, my grandson Donnie, who's 11 right now, says, Zadie, I want to come with you to daven with the minyan. And the daven in the minyan. This was at 6 in the morning, you know.
Mm.
So he got up, he got dressed, and we went to daven together, you know, with the minyan. So, you know, I don't have to tell you how much nachas I get out of that.
But
so there's no question.
So.
Right. No. He's too young for that. When he gets to be bar mitzvah, that's when he puts on. Even though I know that he knows how to take care of tefillin, but still, we abide by the majority opinion, which says, don't go on any, you know, this is too subjective a criterion, okay? What we need is an objective criterion. The objective criterion is the fact that when he reaches the age of 13 in the day, that's when the obligation is there in full force, okay? But as I said, chinuch before, yeah.
You're dealing with rare gems.
Baruch Hashem. And we should all have the same nachas with our gems.
Amen.
Yeah.
Don't find it about me.
Well, we have families, thank God.
There you go.
Yeah, we have. Yeah. I thank him God. But I wish that our schools would teach them, and I wish that the parents who send their kids to school would have the same attitude. Instead of sending them to a school that you know, they want to reinforce what the children do by making it part of their daily life. This is our weakness with the Jewish education here in town. You know. In New York, for example, or in Muncie, or you name it, you know, when parents themselves are religious and they send their children to a yeshiva, to a beis yankiv, and so on and so forth, the kids are learning things that are being reinforced at home. There's no question about that. But here our tragedy is that even if a kid learns something in school, the parents are not observant, they're not reinforcing it, and it's only a theoretical knowledge that they have, but you know, to be disregarded the minute that they step out of the building. And that's our tragedy,
of course.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't want to go into the whole thing over here, because Pace was, you know, is very unhappy over here, because I want to finish the Mishnah. I said that, first of all, we take care of the children, all right. So with the children, as we see already, that Pace was has his doubts, and he expressed various doubts as to whether it should have been included over here. Because if you say only, you know, that he's restricting it to children who are still too young, that they haven't really had, you know, higil or chinuch, then as we see, the basic problem over there is, so why do we say that they're obligated to say shmenes, but won't we excuse them from Krishna? It's a contradiction. Naturally, what we want to do is to say that even though maybe a child, you know, may be young in years, but if the child has enough knowledge in order to be able to do it, then in that case, there's no question that as a result of this basic idea of chinuch, of training our children to observe mitzvahs, that they should be reciting Krishna and Shmoneh Esrei. There's no question about that. All right. So now let's get to the Vayber. All right. The basic reason, of course, why Vayber are excused, and the same thing, by the way, for Avodim, but since for us, Avodim is not a practical business. I mean, we don't have slaves these days. Maybe we are slaves, but we don't have slaves, okay? The basic reason is that it's expressed actually in the Mishnah towards the end of Kiddushin, where it gives also the same general rule. It says that, you know, that women, Noshim, Avodim, you know, are excused, the mitzvahs asei shazman groma. In other words, they're excused from performing those affirmative mitzvahs which depend upon time. Negative mitzvahs, they are equally, you know, obligated to observe as much as any man is, okay? Affirmative commandments which are not dependent upon time, they're equally obligated to observe. But if it's a mitzvah which depends upon time, then in that case they are excused. But there are exceptions. Exception number one, of course, would be eating the Korban Pesach, which would mean, in other words, for a woman, you know, to observe the Seder today, okay? Is a woman excused from observing the Seder? Of course, the answer is absolutely no. She has the same obligation. Because in the time of the Mishnah, the time in the Beis HaMikdash was in existence, women were just as much obligated to eat a kezias of the korban Pesach and to eat, you know, a kezias of the matzah and the morer and so on, as any man was. They had that obligation. Okay? So there, you see, there's already one exception to the rule. And of course, there's another exception to the rule, if you wish. Women are obligated, for example, to take part in the mitzvah of observing the Nes Chanukah, the Nes Purim, Megillah's, you know, the reading of the Megillah, they're required for these things, okay? Women have to observe them just as much as men. So we already, even though they're dependent upon time, but we say that there is another obligation upon women in this particular case, and so it isn't an absolute criterion. And this is what we learned in the Gemara at that time. The Tais was in Kedushin at that time. It's repeated in several other places too. All right. So the upshot is that Tesfus, and particularly with Rabbeinu Tam, came to the following conclusion. He said that even though a woman is excused from a mitzvah asay she'esman groma, does not have to observe, but nevertheless, if she takes upon herself that, you know, she wants to do it, then by all means, she's not only permitted to do it, but she's also permitted to make the bracha over it. Example. Benching Lulav, benching Esrik, we say benching Esrik, but you know, you make the bracha on the Tilas Lulav, okay? A woman is technically free from doing it, yet show me a kosher Yiddish afoy who does not want to bench Esrik. You understand? Everyone wants to be included, and they make the bracha, and we do not say it's a bracha levatah, okay? Women want to hear the blowing of the shofar, even though technically we might say that they're excused from it, right? But yet, with might and main, we want to make sure that women are in shul for the sounding of the shofar. And if, God forbid, a woman is sick at home, technically she might be excused from listening to it. But nevertheless, we know that people will make a special point to go and to blow shofar for them. At least, you know, a tekiah shlom through a tekiah or something. So that they can fulfill at least this obligation to their own happiness. You understand? So, and the same is true of other things. I mean, I know personally a family, I won't mention who, not here in Springfield, Chas v'Shalom, but they observe, they're very frum chassidim, and when Anne said, you know, that she eats in the sukkah with me and the children, they looked at her. What's haste? A woman eating in the sukkah? Who ever heard of such a thing? By us? A woman is there only to go into the kitchen and serve the men in the supper. She has no obligation. So I said, no, so by us it's different. We have a different outlook on these things. A woman also is entitled to sit. Now, if a woman comes in to sit in the sukkah, she also makes the bracha, even though she's not obligated, but still she makes the bracha. And as I say, Rabbeinu Tam justifies the right of a woman to not only observe all these mitzvahs after she has von Groma, but also to make a bracha, and we don't say that this is a bracha of
Bachala. What would you tell a woman that I met at the end of the institute where they had a show, she belonged to a foster conservative, and she was all evil. And you probably know it's on the surface. And she puts on the film. Sunday morning.
I would say that's more a show off. It's not really piety in her case. It's more that she wants to show off the fact that she's doing it.
So
this is my opinion.
The woman is also put up in the same Birkas HaMazon.
No, she's not put up in Birkas HaMazon. The contrary, the Mishnah says over here she is required to say Shemin Esrit, right? And also, she's required to be in a room in a house where there is a mezuzah, because obviously this is not a mitzvah tatzish as von Groma speaking.
Okay,
and then Birkas HaMazon, she's required to bench. Why? Because benching is b'daraisa. You see, here I'm not going into the whole difference. I mean, this really requires a lot more explanation. But it makes a difference too whether it's a mitzvah d'raisa or it's a mitzvah d'rabbanan. Okay? We'll just summarize what we had over there, and then we'll continue on the top of, Chaf Amid Beis, etc., etc. Okay? All right. So, the Mishnah begins by first giving us, as we would say, a klal, a general statement, to the effect that Noshim Avonim Iktanim, that women, slaves, and minor children Paturim Kriyashma, so they're potter from the obligation to recite Krishna, or Minhat Tfilin, and also from the obligation to put on Tfilin. But the Chayovin, says the Mishnah, they are obligated, Bisfilo, which means Shmanesra, of course, of Imzuzo, which means to be in a house where there is a mezuzah. I would say a little more specifically, actually, to be in a room where there is a mezuzah, because in general, most rooms in a house require a mezuzah. Okay? And finally, will be Birkas HaMazon. The woman is required to recite, or a woman, a child and son, recite it. They are required to recite Birkas HaMazon. Because, as I already indicated last week, this is considered Midoraiso, this is a mitzvah from the Torah, and we'll go into that tonight in just a few moments. Okay, let's take a look first of all at the Rashi.
You're going back to the beginning of the Mishnah?
Yeah, well, I'm going right to the Rashi at the beginning of the Mishnah, exactly. Okay, at the bottom of Abed Aleph. Okay? Yeah. All right, so Rashi, you know, starts in by quoting Noshim Avonim Iktan Petur Mekriya Shema. Why? Shehi Mitzvah Saseh Shazman Gorma. Because this is an affirmative commandment, as we've already said, that is dependent upon time for the, you know, for the fulfilling of it, okay? The Kaim Alon, and we have a principle that we learn B'Kiddushin, it's Gemara in Kiddushin, if you remember, it's a Mishnah over there. The notion peturis midoraisa, that women are potter from learning Torah. This is what we learned over there. What was the basis of that? See if we can remember. Why does the Gemara and Kedushin say that women are excused from learning Torah?
Because time
possibly. Not really so much time obligated. No, it's based upon a wording that we have in Kriya Shema. I mean, this is actually what's the basis.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. What does it say in the second paragraph of Kriya Shema? It says, So from this, we learn, according to Gemara and Kedushin, that first of all, it is a mitzvah to teach our sons Torah, but that women are excused because they are not B'nechem. In other words, it's taking a very, very literal interpretation of that. So, Kriya Shema itself partakes of the nature of learning Torah, so that for that particular reason, women are excused, okay? Of course, I don't have to tell you that we spent a great deal of time, you know, when we were learning Kedushin, I mean, discussing this particular issue. There's no question that, you know, you could make a case for the women being excused from studying Torah on the basis that if you take a verse literally, but the question is, Bisman HaZeh, in our own day, can we really justify what, you know, many pious parents used to do in days of old, you know, when they did not send their daughters, you know, to a school in order to learn Torah, when, you know, they were content at best, you know, that if a girl, they would hire a malamed, let's say, to teach a girl, you know, how to read a little bit, you know, to make a bracha, to read a little bit, to read a siddur, or something like that.
They're actually excluded, then, weren't
right,
they?
Well, they were certainly excluded from the Chadorim and the Yeshivas, correct. They certainly were, no question about that. People would very often, however, hire a Malamed, you know, in order to teach girls privately. Okay. When did this situation change? Of course, I'm talking about, you know, in Orthodox circles. Naturally, I'm not talking about...
we're only talking about that brain.
Sure, she's not here to learn Torah. When did the situation change? The answer is that shortly after the First World War, this is essentially when it happened. At that particular time, there was a very brave woman in Poland by the name of Sora Schneera.
Sora?
Schneera.
What was her first name?
Sora.
Sora Schneera.
Okay. She was a woman who rebelled against this idea that, you know, women should not learn Torah formally in schools and so on, and so she started the first school, which she called Beis Yaakov. Why did she call it Beis Yaakov? Because there is a pasuk in connection with the giving of the Torah, Mount Sinai, where Moses says, Kosamar li Beis Yaakov, this is what you shall say to Beis Yaakov, the Sageh Levnei Israel, and you shall tell the children of Israel. And so Rashi over there, based of course upon, you know, the Medrash, how they understood it, they says that the Beis Yaakov over there, this refers to the women. In other words, the women were to be instructed prior to the giving of the Ten Commandments, and also then the men, the Bnei Yisrael, were to be instructed to concerning, you know, the obligation that they were going to receive in Torah. Okay? So therefore she called her school Beis Yaakov. There were many pious people in Poland, Hasidim, you know, who objected to her. But on the other hand, she also won the support of some of the most prominent Rabbonim, such as the Chofetz Chaim. Because they realized that in today's world, where assimilation is so rampant, we can no longer excuse women from studying Torah because of the fact that the future of our people will depend not only upon men being learned the Torah, but women too have to be learned the Torah.
Not only that, the women spend more time with the children than men do.
Of course, that's no question. I mean, even the time in the Gemara, you know, the Gemara asked the question. In connection, for example, if you remember, there was towards the end of the Devarim, they speak about Hakhel. Hakhel is a special service where at the conclusion of the year of Shemitah, the people would gather in the Beis HaMikdash, and then the king would read on a specially constructed bima, a portion at least of the Sefer Devarim, you know, to the people who were gathered over there. It was to renew the commitment of the people of Israel to the study of Torah. And, you know, it's written over there, Ha'anoshim Ha'anoshim Ha'atav, who is to come? The men, the women, and the young children. And the question is, okay, men we can understand. Children we can also understand, because after all, if there are male children, then there is going to be an obligation. As we discussed in the Tosfos last week, question of chinuch. In other words, that when a child gets to be old enough to begin to understand something, that you have to begin training him at that particular point in Tosfos. As for example, what we quoted from the Gemara in Sukkah, that Tosfos quotes, that you have to teach him Torah. What does it mean, teach him Torah? It means that Torah Tzivolon Moshe, this is the first pasuk that you teach him in Torah, and also the first pasuk of Shema. This is what we read in Tosfos, that a parent is obligated. Naturally, from that point on, you build more and more, you know, how to recite brachas, and, you know, learn a little bit more of the Shema and things like that. But, you know, you're also teaching them at the same time, by virtue of the fact that you are observing yourself, and here, of course, both the father and the mother play an extremely important role, and the child grows up in an atmosphere where this is the normal environment and not, you know, something that is completely strange to them, okay? So the Gemara says, you know, why the women? What role do they have? But the answer is because they are the ones who receive reward for bringing their children to the houses of study, to the schools, and so on and so forth. So that's why the entire family is involved in Hakhel, okay? So Sorosh Nira, as I say, was able to gain the support of some of the Rabbanim, such as the Chofetz Chaim, Zichrono Livracha, and eventually the opposition to the establishment of Beis Yaakov died down. And subsequently, of course, today, this is considered, you know, the ultimate in yeshivas and schools for girls in every important Jewish center. You have the Beis Yaakovs. Brooklyn is filled with Beis Yaakovs. In Israel, you have Beis Yaakovs. I mean, all my granddaughters are all attending Beis Yaakovs. My older ones are going to Beis Yaakov high schools. The younger ones are going to elementary schools. And as they get this, you know. So that today, even the Hasidim and so on, you know, they have Beis Yaakovs, or else they have schools that are patterned after the Beis Yaakov. Exactly. They call it Beis Hochel, or Beis Rivka, Beis this one, or Beis that one, and so on and so forth. But the truth of the matter is, what is the model that they're using? This is the Beis Yaakov. So this was a very, very important step in spreading. Jewish education, right, Sorosh Nira. Yeah. very important woman, one of the, I mean, a woman who made a tremendous contribution to the revival of Jewish life in our own time.
She apparently was a learned person.
She was a learned person herself. Don't forget, there were many women, as I said, who did have malamdim at home. They had fathers, they had teachers, you know, who did spend time with them and going over things. So maybe they didn't learn Gemara, okay? Which was considered good trait for a girl to learn, okay? But on the other hand, to learn dinim, like Shulchan Aruch, to learn Chumash, to learn Rashi, these things they did learn, you see.
I think you told us that there was some great authority on the Chumash. The greatest authority on the Chumash is a woman today.
Oh, I mentioned some time ago. I don't know if she's the greatest authority, but certainly one of the finest lecturers on the Torah is this Nechama Leibowitz, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim. And she lectures not only to women, but she also lectures to men as well. And, you know, they look up to her. Yeah, right. As for example, when my son, my daughter, you know, they spent their junior year abroad in Israel. They were learning in Yerushalayim at that time. So they went to, you know, like a brother and sister institution, although they were housed in different areas and so on, but, you know, some of the faculty were the same. So that my son went to the Beis Medrash HaTorah, which today is now part of YU. And my daughter went to the name will come to me, but that's not important what the name is. But the point is that this was also a school for girls, very high school, and this was actually run by the Mizrahi movement in Eretz Israel, but you know, they had affiliations with Stern, where my daughter was going to. And one of the people whom both of them had, you know, for lecture was Nechama Leibowitz. She would teach in the girls' school, she would teach in the boys' school. And the same thing was true with some of the other faculties, such as, for example, was the Rabbi Oritz, who's a specialist in Chumash and Nach and things like that. Or
would the Hasidim allow that? That a woman?
That's already a different story. Now, these schools were not Hasidic, but Beis Yaakov's, yes, as I explained to you. Even if they don't, first of all, you have plenty of Hasidim to send their daughters to Beis Yaakov's. All you have to do is to go into Brooklyn and see that. But in addition, if Lubavitch feels that they want to have their own, so they call it Beis somebody else. It's Beis Rivka. I don't know who the Rivka is in this particular case, but it's also I'm Beis Rivka. Satmar has a base to somebody else, a base Sora or something or other. So
but none of them have, let's say, a woman lecturing to men.
No, that they wouldn't allow.
I don't think so.
No, the Hasidim don't go into that.
No.
But, you know, in more modern schools, as I
modern
said,
Orthodox
right,
would allow.
Talking about modern Orthodox.
Right.
Obviously, I'm not talking about conservative or anything like
obviously.
That. Yeah. Okay. So, as we see over here then, that as we learned in Gemara and Kedushin, there they felt, you know, that a woman has no obligation to learn Torah. Okay? Was filin name mitzvah sase shezvan groma. And how about filin? Filin are also a mitzvah sase, you know, the affirmative commandment, which is dependent on time. Why? The sova Laila v'Shabbos lozman filin into. Why? Because the authority who says so says that at night there is no obligation to wear tefillin, nor is there any obligation to wear tefillin on Shabbos. In fact, I mean, it's a question. There's a Mishnah in the Shabbos which speaks about if a person goes out with tefillin Friday afternoon, what is the din? The question is, you know, would he forget and go out in the public, you know, wearing tefillin, which of course would be osur when Shabbos comes, or not? So, you know, there they give finally the explanation that, you know, a person who's wearing tefillin is under an obligation at all times to remember the fact that he's wearing tefillin, and this is part of the reason why we touch our tefillin from time to time, to bear in mind the fact that we are wearing tefillin, and, you know, what the holiness that's involved in wearing tefillin, and also that we shouldn't violate the Shabbos as a result, you see. So we wouldn't come to violating the Shabbos as a result of that. Well, if we say then that nighttime, and we say that Shabbos are days in which we do not wear tefillin, of course I would also extend that, you know, to the major Yom Tovim. about Chalamed, there's already a big difference between the Ashkenazim and between the Hasidim. The Ashkenazim put on tefillin during Chalamed, the Hasidim did not put it on. And, you know, each one has their reasons for it, okay?
There is some sort of a... someone once told me that if you work during Chalamed, and you're supposed to put
this
on...
This is one explanation.
And if you don't work, you're not supposed to put on tefillin and so on.
People say that. I don't know that it's actually an official reason, however. Okay? Basic reason why the Hasidim do not put it on is because in the Zohar they rave against it, okay? And since Hasidim are more influenced by the Zohar than the Ashkenazim are, that's the basic reason why. So I mean, I once got into a night with my brother-in-law, who's Pablenta Kosin. He and I, you know, looked at it from two different points of view. That's all. I had my tradition, he had his. And so the compromise is that you follow what your father does. If your father put on tefillin, you put on tefillin. If your father did not wear tefillin, then you don't wear tefillin.
True, good way.
This is the
good way to handle it.
Yeah. What do you do in the congregation that doesn't do it, but you do it?
Well,
is it the minhag of the congregation?
In that particular case, you could dispense with wearing tefillin. If you feel that you want to put it on before or after and say Krishna, you can do so. But you're not obligated under the circumstance to be different from the congregation. This is why when I was in Eretz Yisrael, there the minhag is now that even among the Ashkenazim, they don't wear tefillin.
On
the Chalamed. Right. So I was not going to publicly violate, you know, something. So in that case, you excuse the merit. Okay. There, even among the Ashkenazim, in the Shulchan Aruch, there's a question as to whether you should recite a bracha when you put on tefillin during Chalamed or not.
Right.
There's one opinion that says that you don't put on. When you put it on, you do it without a bracha. Because of this doubt, you see, as to whether it's required.
Shouldn't make a bracha.
Right, right. So this is one opinion which is mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch about that. Okay. But anyway, the point that I'm making is that obviously then time is a factor as far as tefillin is concerned, and since women are excused from the affirmative commandments dependent upon time, so therefore they don't wear tefillin either. All right. So, that takes care so far of as far as noshim are concerned. But avodim we're not talking about, because obviously if their time belongs to their master, so in that particular case, there's the time that could be involved, you know, in reciting Krishna, should be devoted instead, you know, to the service of their master. This is how they felt. All right. We don't have any servants, any slaves in that way, so it doesn't apply to us anymore. Okay. And then, how about the katanim? So Rashi said, "Afilu kotech yegia lechinuch lo yitir la'alov lechamcha b'kriya shma." He comes in with a statement which says that even a minor who has already reached the age of chinuch, there is no obligation upon his father to teach him how to say Krishna. Why? Because this child may not always be available at the time when the time is there, you know, to recite Krishna. So this is what we learned last week in the Tosfos, if you remember, that Tosfos is very upset by this statement of Rashi, and then they try to reconcile it. They were upset because, as we already mentioned earlier, once a child reaches the age of chinuch, which means, as we said before, that he can understand things, then it's already a mitzvah to begin to teach him. And this we learn from the Gemara in Sukkah, which tells us that, for example, Kotan Hayadela Nanea Bululov, that once you have a child who knows how to take a lulav and chocolate, so it's a mitzvah, you know, to give him a lulav in order to fulfill the mitzvah. Right. You train him in mitzvahs, you see. And of course, I don't have to tell you that the same thing is true. You build a sukkah in your backyard or wherever you put it. It's a mitzvah to take the children, no matter how young they are, and then put them in the sukkah so they have the experience of being in the sukkah. Okay, so under that circumstance, the question is then, what do we mean by afilu kotnishe geel afinuch? Obviously, if he is old enough, like for example the age of 9 or 10, then in that particular case there's no question that he should be reciting Krishna, he should be taught how to daven and everything else. There's no question. Even though, let's say, the ultimate obligation doesn't rest upon him until he becomes bar mitzvah. But nevertheless, he's already of that age where he should be trained in how to do these, and he should get himself used to, you know, to davening and
performing mitzvahs.
Exactly, to do all these things. Okay. And if we say that Kotn Shigel Echinoch, we're talking about someone who's only about 3 or 4, well, in that case, we may say that it may still be too young, perhaps. And that's what the you know, the problem was. So this is what Tosfos finally decided, that maybe that's what they're talking about when it says Kotn Shigel Echinoch, that, you know, he doesn't have the obligation, that is, the father doesn't have the obligation to teach him Krishna, but that still runs contrary to what they say, that the Dibarto Bom, right, the Maritim on Summons Benechem, the Daber Bon, excuse me, not the Dibarta, but the Daber Bon, that particular one, is that as soon as they reach the age where they can already, you know, begin talking, teach them it. So, this is why, you know, there are exceptions to what we had. And then I mentioned, of course, that as far as the women were concerned, famous Tosfos of Rabbeinu Tam, wherein he paskin that if a woman decides that she wants to take upon herself
the obligation
of performing a mitzvah, say she has man gromo, she has the right to do so, and not only that, but it also would not be a brocha levatola for her to do it. And this is the justification why a woman, for example, can make a brocha over the lulav, she can make a brocha sitting in the sukkah, in spite of the fact that the obligation is for the men and theoretically not for the women, right? But nevertheless, she can do it, and it's not a bracha levatol. So that this is what Rabbeinu Tam paskin. As far as women wearing tefillin is concerned, I repeat again, you know, what I said for Lazer last week. I think that those women in the Jewish Theological Seminary, or, you know, some of those who follow their model, are doing it more, not out of Yirah Shemayim, but they're doing it in order to show up the men, you know, that, hey, I'm a feminist, and therefore, you know, I can do whatever you can do.
Yeah. So they also wear talisim.
Yeah, same story, right.
Matter of fact, I got a catalog in the mail today from California of all these.
For women, you know?
For women to do crochet and needlepoint.
Crocheting is one thing.
No, but to crochet, a talis for a woman.
I see. It says specifically a talis for women.
To put the fingers on the
scarves they can always
if it's
knit,
a talus,
right?
It has to have fringes,
right.
If it doesn't have fringes,
you don't call it a talus. As simple as all that.
That's right.
Okay, so let's continue with the rest of the Rashi now on the top of the next page. Okay, alright, the minhat filin, you see that?
Yeah,
okay, so Rashi says why? Of course what he's talking about now over here is the last statement, that a cotton is also excused from filling. Why is a cotton excused from filling? So he says, "Bishum nistam cotton in your daily shmon gufo shelo yafiach lehem." It says that an ordinary cotton, an ordinary, you know, young child, doesn't know enough how to guard his body, that, for example, he shouldn't flatulate while wearing filling. Okay, I'm using a fancy word to make a fart.
Oh, I see. Break wind, you mean?
Sometimes
break
wind.
Okay.
Sometimes they have to talk marvelous.
Break wind. All right. Now we know what you're talking about. I've never heard the term flatulence.
The child may not realize, you know, he doesn't have enough bodily control, says Rashi over here, so that he's liable to let loose. And, you know, while wearing tefillin, so therefore we don't put him on tefillin to begin with, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But again, I repeat, at what point do we begin to teach a young man how to put on tefillin? Of course, the answer is shortly before Bar Mitzvah. My own feeling is that he should be taught a half year before, 4 months before, 3 months before, and then I follow the custom that it was the same custom that I observed, namely that a month before Bar Mitzvah was already putting on tefillin on a regular basis, so that, you know, would be used to how to put them on, know how to put them on, take care of them, take them off, put them on, take them off, what do you have to do in order to watch them over them carefully and so on, okay? And this is the custom that I grew up with. Now sometimes, by the way, even the Shulchan Aruch paskens that you can do it at some other earlier age. Particularly in the case of, let's say, a yosem, leolena, okay? Child becomes orphan. In his case, even at the age of 12 or 12 and a half, it's already permitted for him to put on tefillin. Because, you know, after all, he's taking on, to a certain extent, responsibilities that his father would have had his father live, you see. This is what I'm talking about, okay? So, in that case, they permit it. There are some who say that if a young man is really a Ben Torah already at that age, he could also begin at 12 and a half to put on tefillin. So, that's why I say, the idea, you know, there are different times, different stages as to when a young man should begin putting on tefillin, but of course, when does the actual obligation remain upon him? This is from the time of Bar Mitzvah. But once he starts in to put it on, let's say it's, 12 and a half, or 12 and 11 twelfths, or something like that, right? Then in that particular case, he should begin doing it on a regular basis and not simply put it on one day and then forget about it for the next 2 weeks or something like that. It should be something that he does
for the rest of their life.
Right, right. This is the idea. This is what we hope will develop, you know, that they'll get into the habit of wearing tefillin all the time. Yeah. Today, Baba Nisenu Harabim, you know, we're living in a different age where the fathers don't put on tefillin, the children don't put on tefillin. You can teach a boy, I mean, after all, from time to time, I'll teach a bar mitzvah boy, and actually one of the things that I teach him is how to put on tefillin. I'll insist that the parent buys tefillin for the child and everything else. But if the father himself doesn't put it on, what guarantee do I have that the child is going to do it?
Well, the father doesn't even have a set of tefillin.
Yeah. Yeah. Happens.
That's right.
All right. So now the question is, why are Noshim Abonim and Ketanim the Chayom Bitfila? Why are they required to recite Shemoneh Esrei? Okay? So Rashi says, the Tfila Rachmehi says, after all, Shemoneh Esrei, we are begging the Rebbeinu Shelelam for his mercy. He should show his mercies to us and, you know, and heed our requests as a result of his mercies, right? So Umidrabonim, he, not only that, but also the Shemoneh Esrei was ordained by our sages. It was not something which is commanded in the Torah, but it was ordained in, by our sages. In fact, as we'll learn a little bit later, the fourth perek, there we learn that it was the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the members of the great Knesset. In other words, these were the people who came back from the Babylonian exile together with Ezra and Nehemiah. And they were the ones who created the Nusach and Brachos and the Tefillah, you know, Shemoneh Esrei and things like that and so on. And they created other things too that we observe. As for example, benching lich. It became a woman's mitzvah. Now why? Where's it saying in the Torah that you have to bench lich? It doesn't say that. But nevertheless, the members of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola ordained that this is one of the mitzvahs, okay? And it's on that basis, you see, that a woman is not saying a bracha levatola to say, Asher kedishonu b'mitzvah, so, v'tzivonu, you know, l'hadik ner shel Shabbos, etc., okay? So that the idea then is that the takonis of the Anshei Knesset HaGdola have, in many cases, the effect or the effectiveness, if you wish, as if it were the Torah itself who had commanded it. And as we already had occasion to see in one or two places, that he brings up the idea that what our sages ordained is me'enda raisa tikna, that they ordained it in the spirit of the Torah, and therefore it has an effect for us as if the Torah itself had commanded it. Nevertheless, we still distinguish between mitzvah sase, let's say a mitzvah in the rice and a mitzvah rabbanon, but that's for other reasons as well. Nevertheless, as Jews, we observe whether it was the Torah that commanded us or whether it was the Chachamim who instituted it. All right. Now, the Chayovim ben Bitvila, says the Mishnah, they are required to observe Shemoneh Esrei, Ubim Zuzah, they're also required to observe Mezuzah, Birkas Hamazon, and also Benching. Prayers for God's mercy, and we could all use God's mercy, men, women, and children, right? Umidrabbanan he, and also it was ordained, this was established by our Chachamim, so the Tiknuha, Af Livnoshim or the Kinyan Katan. Therefore, the sages could come along and they could ordain that it should be observed also by the women, and also to train the children that they should also learn how to say, how to daven Shemoneh Esrei. Okay? And how about the mezuzah b'vikas hamozen? So he explains. Mezuzah, he says, mitzvah aseh, shelei hazman gomer. The mitzvah of living in a house, or living in, you know, staying in a room where there is a mezuzah, this is an affirmative commandment. After all, it's written on Saptam al mezuzah specifically sharecha, but it's not dependent upon time. Day or night, I mean, it's the same. I mean,
right.
We're not only required, let's say, to sit in the house, but we're required to sleep in the house which has a mezuzah. You understand? So there's no time dependency there. And of course, again, when we say mitzvah saseh shehazman groma, we mean specifically an affirmative command which is dependent upon time. But any mitzvah saseh which is not dependent upon time, women have exactly the same obligation to observe as men do. And of course, any mitzvah leisaseh, all those things that are prohibited to both men and women alike. It makes no difference. Right. We're all required to observe these things.
But mezuzah is also a rabbinic...
No, it isn't. It's midaraisa. It says, Saptam al mezuzah is v'sefer. Doesn't say it in the Krishna.
Oh.
Right? So it's mentioned both in the first and the second paragraph of the Krishna.
Right.
It's mentioned. So it's a mitzvah saseh.
Right.
But it's not dependent upon time.
Right.
And it's midaraisa. Okay? The Gemara Park Peshitta says that the Gemara is then going to ask, isn't this obvious? Obviously, if the Gemara says, isn't this obvious? So there must be some reason why the Gemara asked that question. Okay? And then how about Birkas HaMazon? So our Rashi explains the Gemara Boilor, and he says the Gemara is going to ask the question, is it the Raisa? Is Birkas HaMazon a commandment from the Torah, or the Rabbanon, or is it only rabbinically ordained that we should say that? Pardon me? Of course, it's exactly what it says. So it's a mitzvah saseh. However, we'll see that the question is really, how much food do we have to eat for us to have a biblical
obligation
as compared to a rabbinic obligation? So we see that there is the the crux of the question, right? Okay, there are reasons for all of these things. Okay, all right. Now there's one Tesis on the top over there. Now the Tesis base as we go down a little bit the line. All right. So Kriya Shema, Gemara. Okay. All right. The Gemara now takes this mission apart and starts and discusses it piece by piece. Okay. All right, so the first thing we said is Krishma. We said that, you know, women and davonim and ketanim are excused. Pshita, isn't this obvious? Mitzvah saseh shehazman gromahu. After all, doesn't this fall under the general category of an affirmative commandment dependent upon time? Bechol mitzvah saseh shehazman gromah noshim b'tiros. And we learned, as we said before in the Gemara Kedushin, that all affirmative commandments dependent upon time, women are excused from it, although I pointed out last week that even over there in the Gemara and Kedushin, they pointed out a couple of exceptions, as for example, Korban Pesach, and the Kriyas of Megillah has already been the Rabbanan.
Okay,
it's been Rabbanan. Yeah. But alright, let's take Korban Pesach, because that question is also about Milah, but after all, Milah doesn't depend upon a woman. Okay. But Korban Pesach does depend on, women are just as much obligated to eat a piece of the Korban Pesach or to eat a Kazayas Matzah as men are, you see. So even though it is a mitzvah saseh shehazman gromo, but the Torah itself, it doesn't really spell it out. But our sages understand that this applies to women as well as to men. Why? Because it says v'nichas ha'nefesh ha'im Yisrael. In other words, there is the issur of koras if you don't observe it. So that being the case, so women already also fall into the category, you see, that if they violate a commandment for which there is a punishment in the Torah, then in that particular case they are just as much obligated to observe it as men are. Okay? This is the way we analyzed it at that time. All right. Now, Gemara over here says as follows, says, Bau de Seimo, what if you should argue that Hoel be Yisbo Malku Shemayim, that, look, Krishna should be recited by women. Forget about the fact, you know, that it's a nisva sasrisha, it's bangrama. There's another factor that's more important and should override it, namely the fact that in it we accept upon ourselves the Yol Malchus Shamayim, as we already said that when we say Shema Yisrael, we are accepting upon ourselves the yoke of serving God, the yoke of the kingdom of heaven. So Kamashmonon, this is why the Mishnah says that from the point of view of Midaraisa, we would say women are not required to recite these things. Okay, gone fine. Uminat filin, pshita. Again, they ask the same question. Shouldn't this be obvious? Or now the same ohel the iskash the mezuzah, komashvola. So now they say something different for tefillin. Maybe we would argue that in the case of tefillin, women should wear tefillin. Why? Because first of all, what does it say? It says concerning the mezuzah, saftom al mezuzah v'secho v'sharecha. Right. But what does it follow immediately upon? Right? So that therefore we would say, okay, we have stated that women are required to observe the Saftam, our mezuzahs, right? So therefore they should also be required to observe the sentence before, which says, Ukshatim and right? So therefore, Kamash Bonon, this is why the Mishnah teaches us then that women do not have this obligation to wear them. Okay. All right. Next, birkas hamazon. Why are women commanded to observe birkas hamazon? Here we said they are not excused from it, right? But they are commanded to recite birkas hamazon. Pshita. Shouldn't this be obvious? So what is the objection? He says, "Mao the same ahoil sif." Inasmuch as you might argue that it is written. It's written in connection with the manner of good evening, Sidney, grab a Gemara, sit down and come and join us at the tish.
Did you skip a...
Did I?
Yeah, you skipped a portion. Oy
vey.
Yeah, you went from...
Oy vey vey. Yes, you're right. Hey, my eye just
was
playing tricks on me.
I couldn't follow you.
Sorry. Okay. The chayovim bitfila. Okay. Yeah. Women are, however, obligated to recite Shema Nesra. Okay. Why? So the Gemara says the Rachmei Nidhu, right?
Because
I mean Rashi, we already read it in Rashi, but the point is Rashi, where does Rashi get this idea? Gets it from the Gemara. So what does the Gemara say? The Gemara says the Rachmei Nidhu, in as much as when we say Shmanesu, we pray to the Benisha and he should have mercy upon us and grant us, you know, all the good things that we pray for in Shmanesu. So we might say, you know, what? That you know, maybe women should be excused because it's in mitzvah sasrisha she'has ban grama. In other words, davening Shmoneh Esrei is dependent upon time. Mao the same, or what if you would say, Hoil et Sibba, inasmuch as it is written concerning tefillah, right? Concerning prayer to God. Erev avolkev et zohavoyim. It's written in Tehillim over there that Erev avolkev et zohavoyim. Evening, morning, and noon do I pray before God. Okay? Okay? So, inasmuch as they mention specific times, right? Erev in the evening, Boker in the morning, and Tzoharayim, which means at noon, well, we could interpret in the afternoon, which makes, you know, which fits in better with the idea of the Mincha, because Mincha has to be afternoon, right? So we would think then, Kemitzvah Sasei Shasban Gromadomi. So we would think then that davening Shmoneh Esrei is to be compared to a mitzvah sasei dependent upon time. So kamash malon, therefore the Mishnah teaches us that no, this is not a factor. A woman is expected to daven Shmoneh Esrei. Okay. I do want to tell you right now, although the Mishnah says that a woman is expected to daven Shmoneh Esrei, okay, there are authorities who say that the word tefillah over here, women can get by simply saying a prayer sometime in the day. In other words, they don't take tefillah in the technical sense in which we've been explaining it all along, and which is the most common way that the Mishnah and the Gemara and so on, you know, they understand it, namely Shmoneh Esrei. But tefillah simply in the sense of prayer. That if a woman says a certain amount of prayers in the morning, then she is excused from saying Shemoneh Esrei. There are those who say that. That for a woman, for example, to say Moedah Ani, to say the first paragraph of Krishna, maybe to say Shtikal Aleinu, or something or like that. You
or
understand?
Ashrei,
yeah. Ashrei, whatever it may be, okay, that if a woman says a little davening in the morning, then she's already fulfilled the obligation of prayer for the day. There is that opinion, okay? But this is already a later opinion that we find, you know, expressed by some of the authorities in the Shulchan Aruch and post-Shulchan Aruch literature. You understand?
Not necessarily.
Yeah.
In the original text.
Not in the original. The original is no question, but Tefillah, that in my mind it means Shemoneh Esrei. So the fact that we excuse women from saying Shemoneh Esrei, that's because we realize that maybe the women maybe are not up to it. They have other obligations which weigh so heavily upon them that they can't do it. So if they say at least a little tefillah, they've already fulfilled an obligation.
Where does the argument of rachamim come in? Praying for mercy?
Yeah, well, you ask a very good question. But the point is that in prayer,
in previous,
right, I mean, there's a certain amount, I mean, that even if we say Ashrei or something like that, I mean, we say Verachmav al kol masav or something like that, so we're already alluding to this, even if we don't specifically ask for it, for God's mercies. But there is at least some allusion to some of the things that we say. So it's on that basis I say that there are authorities to it. Nevertheless, I have to tell you, I know that my daughter, there isn't a day that she doesn't daven Shacharis and Mincha and Pirate and Shemoneh Esrei and everything else. She waits until she's finished with all the kids, taking care of feeding them, clothing them, sending them off to school, whatever it may be. And then she'll take a little time for herself in order to daven. Okay? And this is what many pious women do. My mother-in-law, Lehi Sholem, is the same thing. I mean, she never missed davening and so on. So, you know, when you have young children, nearly at times, but if you have a little leisure time, then it's considered a meritorious thing. So it's considered a mitzvah for a woman to do it, even if she doesn't have the obligation. Yeah. Same thing is true of my granddaughters. They daven three times a day, too, I can tell you that.
But don't they use the argument of, this argument of rachamim, praying for God's mercy, and in a previous argument?
They said, inasmuch as Shemoneh Esrei is rachamim,
right?
So, you know, for that, excuse me, so maybe we should excuse him. So there's the reason, you know, that, but nevertheless, our sages did say that they have to do it, that's all.
Okay.
So you can see, I mean, that they're consistent with their point of view, but since the time of the Mishnah, there have been other interpretations, you know, that have developed because of, you know, conditions are a little bit different, whatever they may be, right? Does that require us, you know, to obligate women, if we possibly can, to observe more rather than to observe less? Okay. Now we come to, the mezuzah. All right, what, why are they required to observe the Zuzah? So Pshita isn't as obvious. So he says, Mount Hashem, maybe you would argue that Hoyle Yiskar Shatamah Torah, inasmuch as the Mezuzah contains what? Contains a parchment which has to deal with Torah. And so therefore, a woman should be excused from having to stay in a house which has a Mezuzah because of the Talmud Torah, since she's excused from that. So Kamash Malon, for that reason, we learn that no, she has the obligation. Over Birkas HaMazon, why does she have the, you know, the obligation to recite Birkas HaMazon? Pshita, isn't this obvious? Mao the same, maybe you would argue, Hoyel Rasiv, the Seisar Hashem Lachem, Ber, Bosa Leach, Ova Lechem, Aberka, Lisbaya, that inasmuch as it is written in the Torah in connection with the giving of the manna, that when God will give you in the evening meat to eat, and bread in the morning, so that you will be filled to satiety. So, kemitzvah sasei shasban goma doma. So then we might think that the giving of food to us by the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, therefore, is in the same category as the mitzvah sasei, which is dependent upon time. So, kamash malon, no, it is not. And therefore, a woman has the obligation to recite Birkas HaMazon. Okay. So far, we've given our taich to the Mishnah as the Gemara understands it. Okay? We'll continue over here, and then if I have time, I'll go over some of the Taisvas. But let's learn a little bit more text, at least down to the Mishnah, further down on the page. Okay? All right. So the Gemara, first of all, now quotes, inasmuch as we said that women are required to bench, right? This is what we've said.
Mm-hmm.
So how about any other obligation which might possibly be dependent upon time, and yet women have an obligation? So this is what the next quote is. Omer Rabbeinu Barava, Rabbeinu Barava said, Noshim Chayovos Bekiddush Hayom, Devar Torah. Women are obligated to hear Kiddush, because Kiddush Hayom is, you know, specifically the Kiddush for Shabbos, okay? Friday night Kiddush, and to a certain extent, you know, the Shabbos morning Kiddush, they are obligated, okay? They are obligated to partake or participate of this Kiddush, okay? And not only that, but he says that this is the Devar Torah, this is ordained by the Torah. Azei Zokta. So the Gemara now asks the following question, Amai, how come you make a statement that this is an obligation upon women that, you know, the Torah has commanded? Isn't it mitzvah sase shazman gromahu? Isn't this also an affirmative commandment which is dependent upon time? After all, we don't make Kiddush every day. When do we make it?
Yes.
We make it on a holy day. We make it on Shabbos. We make it on Yom Tov. That's when we have the obligation to do it. So it depends upon time. So why should we say then that women have no obligation to participate in Kiddush? So Omar Abaye, Abaye said,
where are you?
Yeah, with the Rabbanan. He says that this is an obligation, you know, that the rabbis placed upon them. So Omar Lechova, so Rabbi said to Abaye, the Hodevat Torah Koman, hey, didn't Rav Avda Barava say that this was ordained by the Torah? So how come you come and you tell me that it's not midoraisa, you know, it's not ordained by the Torah, but it is rather midorabbanan, it was only the sages, you know, who ordained that this should happen? The Od. Furthermore, he says, look, if you're going to say that women are obligated, you know, to observe a mitzvah saseh, right? Then in that case, we all call mitzvah saseh nechayvin l'midrabanan. Then in that case, why don't we place an obligation upon women to observe every single positive commandment, every affirmative commandment that our sages have ordained?
Regardless
of time. If it's an affirmative commandment, it should apply to men and to women. This is his argument. Okay?
Yeah.
Elo Omar Rava, but rather said Rava, Omar Kra, Torah says as follows, it's written Zohar Vishamra. You know that we have two versions of the Aseres HaDibros, of the Ten Commandments. The first one we find, of course, in Parsha Yisroi, and there it says Zohar Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. And then, when we come to Parsha Veschanan, and we repeat, you know, some of the, Moshe Rabbeinu repeats some of the great events in Jewish history that happened to the people of Israel in order to teach them the obligation to serve God. So he repeats for them also the Ten Commandments. And what does he say at the beginning of the Fourth Commandment over there? There is written, Shamor Es Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho, right? Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, okay? So, of course, our sages already have said it in the Talmud that actually a miracle occurred at the time when the Ten Commandments were given, and Zohar Vishoma was recited simultaneously by the Rabbeinu Shalom, so that the people heard both Zohar and Shomer at the same time. Stan, you have a question? No. Okay. And this is why, for example, in Bechor Doidi, you know, which is based upon the statement of the Gemara, this is why we say Zohar Vishoma B'Diborecha, that they were recited with one word of the Almighty. Okay? So, how does he interpret, you know, Zohar and Shomer? He says, Kol sheyeshdom bishmira, yeshdom bishira. He says, whoever is obligated with Shmira, to observe the Sabbath is also obligated with zechira, with remembering the Sabbath. All right, now to understand this, we'll go over the Rashi up to this point. Okay? All right, so we'll start from the top over there where it says Gemara for Rashi, and we'll see how Rashi is handling this particular discussion. The first thing that Rashi comments on is Ma'u Desema, what if you would say Nakish Tefillin and Mezuzah? Why don't we compare Tefillin to the Mezuzah? Right, we said, you know, one of the objections, they said, inasmuch as the mezuzah, a woman is obligated, so why don't we obligate a woman also to observe tefillin, because the two stand right next to each other. Okay? Dichsiv, it is written, right, ukshartam and uksavtam, right? So ma mezuzah noshem chayovos, so our tefillin noshem chayovos. So kamash malon, this is why the Mishnah teaches us that women are excused from wearing tefillin. All right. Now here Rashi is talking about the text. The text it says should read Tefilo, in other words, Shmenes, but this is Rachmin. This is, you know, this is a prayer for mercy. Below Goras Pshita, and the word Pshita doesn't belong over there. The whole Lavda Raisahi, because as far as you know, Shmenes is concerned, this is not a mitzvah from the Torah. This is what the rabbis ordained that we should observe. Alright. But as I say, that's only a textual problem. Alright, so then the next question that they raised, if you remember, Nakish Mezuzah, the Talmud Torah. Why couldn't we compare Mezuzah to the study of Torah?
Right.
Dichsiv, it's written over there, Belimadetem Oysham is Benechem, right? Which we know, from this we learn the mitzvah that you have to teach your children Torah. People have, you know, as I said before, it's the obligation of the men, of the males, right? The men, the boys, they're the ones who have the obligation to learn Torah, according to the Gemara in Kiddushin. The Samech Lei, and right next to it, Uchasavtom. It is written, you know, that you are to write them. So Ma Talmud Leima, why are the two of them together? So Ma Talmud Leima Noshim Tuturos. So why should we say that women are parted from wearing tefillin? The Yafal Gavdin Asman Groma Rachmona Patrinu. So he says that even though tefillin are not technically dependent upon time, our sages excused them from what? Excuse me, this is not tefillin, this is in reference to Talmud Torah, he says, yeah, this is what Rashi is referring to over here. He says, even though the study of Torah is not dependent upon any particular time, in other words, we can learn Torah day and night, correct? Not dependent, you know, upon a specific time that we learn Torah. So the question is, why then were women excused from it, since according to this argument it is not a mitzvah sase shesman groma, right? So nevertheless, Rachmona Patrinu, the Torah itself excused the women. Dirsiv es b'neichem, it's written specifically your sons, literally. And below b'nai seichem, and not your daughters then. I mean, it doesn't say below b'nai seichem the Torah, but this is, you know, how the sages understood. That if you take the word b'neichem literally, then it means that it doesn't apply to b'nai seichem. Those of you who came in late, you missed my whole exposition about why women have to go and learn Torah, and why it's important to do it, and how the sages today, you know, don't follow this particular statement, okay?
I'll play it back for you.
Yeah, okay, fine. Okay, so after mezuzah, then we should say, all right, tefillin, excuse me, Talmud Torah and mezuzah, they go together, so after mezuzah, Moshe Peturis. Why shouldn't we say then that women are not, you know, not obligated to be in a place where there are mezuzahs on the door? So Kamash Balon, therefore we learn the notion of chayovos, women are obligated to do this siv, because there's another reason. It's written Laman Yubu Yemeichem, right? That if you observe the mitzvahs of the mezuzah, plus the other mitzvahs, but all right, let's say, I mean, after all, you know, the way the wording is in the second paragraph of the Shema, if you remember, right? That after, you know, Limartem on his Benegon David Bom, Mishit Rubesel, Levitavish on then, and says, Saptam on Mizuzu, Sevish on Epon, correct? And then what's the next thing? The Man Yubu Yemechem, Yemechem. So, how do they interpret the Man Yubu Yemechem? Which means literally that if you observe these things, your days will be lengthened upon the land which God gives you, right? So it's very simple. He says, "Gabri boy chay noshele boy chay b'miyo," which means men require a long life, and women don't require a long life. Women also have to have to be blessed with a long life.
Yeah.
Right.
They have their little jokes, huh?
Right, right. As you can see, Rashi has a sense of humor too. So that being the case, therefore women are obligated to do what? The answer is, of course, you know, to deliver the house with the mezuzah, so that they also should be blessed with a long life because of keeping of the commandments. All right. Then, of course, we then have the statement of Rav Ada Bar Ahava, who said that women are obligated for Kiddush Hayom. And we said, but this is mitzvah saseh. That's what that memayin over there means.
Yeah,
you see the memayin?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that means mitzvah saseh. Shazman gromahu. Isn't this also an affirmative commandment which is dependent upon time for its fulfillment? It's written, Zohar es yom ha-shavos ha-kacho. So the answer that he gives is what? That if they're obligated with shmira, they're also obligated with Sechira. But what is the actual, what is the technical difference between Sechira and Shmira? Rabbi Rosenzweig gave a whole discourse on it one time between Mincha and Marav over here. But, you know, he elaborated and he gave his own Chiddush over there. I'll go only, I'll take the simple pshat. I mean, how our sages understood it, okay? How did our sages understand it? And this is what Rashi brings, okay? It's written, Zohar es yom ha-shavos ha-kacho. So what does it mean? So our sages said, Zochreyu al hayayin. In other words, this refers to the affirmative commandments that we fulfill on Shabbos. This is how we remember Shabbos. As, for example, reciting Kiddush. But what other mitzvah, for example, would also be Zochreyu? Things that we do in order to remember that it's Shabbos. What else do we do?
Well,
the answer is
Havdalah.
Yeah, well, that's already after Shabbos. Okay. No, I'm thinking about, for example, benching lid.
Yeah.
It's also it's the affirmative commandment, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I told you it was with the Rabbanim, but nevertheless, it carries out the spirit of Zochar es yom ha-shavos. These are affirmative things that we're doing. Right. And to eat is, you know, there's an obligation that we should eat three meals during the Shabbos.
That's right.
There's a difference of opinion in the Gemara Shabbos as whether it means Friday night and two meals on Shabbos. This is the official interpretation. But there was also a Rav Chitke who says, what do you mean? Says you're obligated to eat Friday night and then three meals during the Shabbos day itself. You should have in the morning and the noon and in the evening. And see, it's on his basis, you see, that we have Shalashuddas and so on. But whichever way you interpret it, okay? The point is that to eat three meals on Shabbos is definitely, it's also Zohar es yom ha-shavos ha-kacho, okay?
Right.
So that therefore the question is, and what is Shomer es yom ha-kadosh? Shmira? So that, he says, is delay sasim aloha. The Shemira is that we don't do anything which violates the laws of Shabbos. As, you know, for example, not to light fire, right, and, you know, not to cook on Shabbos itself, and not to carry and things like that, you know. These things that we observe, this is observing the negative precepts, and that's Shmira. So, inasmuch as women are obligated to Shmira, because what did we say? Whenever we talk about Mitzvah Saseh Shehazman Groma, this never applies to the negative commands. Negative commandments are equally incumbent upon men and upon women. There's no question. So, inasmuch as women have the negative commandment of Shemira, so they also have the affirmative commandment of Zechira. Should women recite Kiddush for themselves or not? This is already a different story. For this, we can rely upon a different teaching. In many cases, as we'll see, and we may quote it in Tosfos as well, we have a klal mentioned in the Gemara in Sukkah in connection with the Hallel. Okay? And there we set up a general rule which says that Shemeya Ke'ena, which means that if a person hears a bracha and he answers amen to that bracha, he can thereby fulfill his mitzvah of participating in the bracha. You understand? So that, you know, on this basis we have many things. In other words, one person, for example, could bench for an entire group. And it would be legal. I'd rather get everybody to join in the benching, because it's more important that everybody learn how to bench, because we're not always fortunate enough to be benching in a group, you know, but we're benching ourselves and we should know how to bench. So, okay, but technically, one person can say, for example, Hamotzi for the entire group who are present over there, and the people are Yotze by simply answering Omein to him. Okay? So, if one person benches aloud and does the entire benching, I'm not talking, you know, to say only half a benching, but I mean to bench the entire thing aloud, then everybody else could be Yotze by saying Omein to the brothers. Okay? And the same thing, therefore, would be true, what? As far as Kiddush is concerned. If the man would recite Kiddush and she answers Amen to her husband's Kiddush, then she is Yotze. She has fulfilled the obligation of, you know, participating in Kiddush Hayom. Okay? Of course, the same would apply to the children as well. All right. But, now let me ask the next question. And what would happen if, for example, the husband is away on Shabbos? Then what? Is a woman excused from reciting Kiddush, or does she have an obligation to recite Kiddush?
I think she has an obligation.
She has the obligation, exactly.
Just like if the woman is away and a man has to license.
Right, 100% true. If a man is at home, for example, and the woman is away, I mean, she's on a trip or wherever it may be, or has to show in the hospital or something like that.
He may light the candles at her.
Yeah, right. But a man really has the obligation to light candles at home, too. Exactly.
And the bracha, too.
And yeah, with the bracha, absolutely. It's not a bracha de la Torah in this case. So, a woman does have, then, this obligation to recite Kiddush, okay? About Abdullah, I have to tell you, there's a big machlekes in the Shulchan Aruch as to whether a woman can say Abdullah for herself or not. Some say absolutely, and some say that it would be better if she hears Abdullah from a man. But in Kiddush, nobody says that. In Kiddush, there's no question at all that if a man is not there to recite Kiddush, then the woman should recite Kiddush. No question at all about that. Okay? So we see then that this is a very, very practical halacha that we're learning from over here. Okay? All right, let's finish the Rashi over here. The Shmira, we said, you know, then this refers to Leisatim Halacha, right? This refers to the negative commandments that they are not permitted to violate Shabbos. They Hani Noshe, and our women, he says, Isnehu Bishmira. They have just as much the obligation to observe the negative commandments concerning not to violate Shabbos as any man has. This non, as we have learned in the Torah, it's not in the Torah, we learned in the Gemara Kedushin, it says, call mitzvahs leisaseh, any negative commandment, bein shazman gromo, bein shein hazman gromo. And here it makes no difference whether it is dependent upon time or it's not dependent upon time. Noshim chayobos, women are obligated to observe them, the Hishwa HaKosuv, because the Torah itself has made equal Isha Le'ish, women and men, L'chol Onshim Shabbat Torah, when it comes to any of the punishments in the Torah. So if this is the case, then it means that women have exactly the same obligations to perform as men when it comes to not to violate any of the negative commandments that we have. Okay, so we'll stop at this particular point. Yirtzeh Hashem, next week at 7 o'clock, we shall continue with our Gemara Shir from where we left off over here.
Welcome to base, right. All right, we'll start with the business about women and being required for Kiddush. But they must hear Kiddush. Well, they have to say Kiddush if necessary, okay?
Now what page is it in
that? Oh, 40. This would be page 40.
Yeah. Starting with the Gemara part?
Yeah, well, we already did the Mishnah,
yeah.
And we did the first part of the Gemara too, and then if you remember, we did Rashi, and I did a couple of Tesis too, if I remember
correctly. Right,
Okay, so, and then in general, I discussed the business about, you know, women and the whole concept of Mrs. Asesha, Zvan Gromo, that, you know, in reality, if a woman wants to observe a mitzvah, even though it's a mitzvah zaseh shazman gromo, she's permitted to do it, first of all, and secondly, she's permitted to make a bracha, and it's not considered bracha levatala. This is how Tosfos, Rabbi Natan, decided that it's a very important concept, because it means that women can participate as much as men in many of the things that we're talking about, even though they don't have the tiyuv to do so. And as I explained, you know, this is the reason why, for example, women do bench esrei. Why? Because of the fact that even though it's a mitzvah, shas man groma, nevertheless, if they want to take this responsibility upon themselves, then by all means they do so. If a woman wants to sit in the sukkah, in spite of my Hasidic in-laws,
you have to provide them a feast in the sukkah.
Nah.
What are you kidding?
But I mean, to take it seriously. But on the other hand, the reaction of my wife, my children, was quite to the contrary. The funny thing is, you know, that the same ones who say that, but they have no objection, for example, if, let's say, their daughters coming in and sitting in the sukkah. Now, why do they say that their wife is not permitted, and at the same time they encourage their daughters to do it? I mean, there's a certain tat of the sasri.
Ambivalence.
Right, very much so. I mean, that doesn't quite make sense. So that's why, as I say, I think that what Rabbeinu Tam had to say makes a lot more sense, okay? The only problem that you have, you know, with the ruling about the mitzvah sasri is ban groma. If a woman, for example, wants to daven for the omit,
to go to a conservative synagogue.
Right.
And a very orthodox one too, as long as it's only women.
As long as it's only women. Yeah.
That's a different
story. Yeah.
Yeah. This is a compromise that was worked out in some of the special women mechavuros or something like that that they have in New York and some other places and so on, that, you know, the women daven for themselves. And as a result, they read the Torah for themselves, and so on. There are those who feel that even though technically it's permissible, but nevertheless they don't like it for a different reason. It means that women are separating themselves from the tefillah b'tzibur, which is not such a good idea. It's better if a family goes in order to daven together as a family, you see. And the only thing is, we have to impress upon the women, you got to know your place. Yeah, on the other side of the mechitza. Absolutely. Not only among, you know, the reform and the conservative, but among the orthodox as well. And this is where a problem comes in. Okay.
Well, even in the old days of the Beis HaMikdash, the women had their own separate place. They had the women's court.
Yeah, there was the Ezra's Noshim, absolutely. This was the courtyard where the women stayed.
And they prayed for them.
Right. And, you know, the Gemara in Sukkah explains that particularly on Sukkahs, when the Beis HaMikdash was mobbed with people, that they set a separate area, like a balcony or something, for the women, so that, you know, because there were such crowds coming that the women's court alone did not suffice for the women, and the men needed the space too, you see, so that they purposely made a separation in order to make sure that the festivity should not turn into lewdness, you see. This part of it. Now, of course, I mean, remember that maybe it seems a little bit far-fetched about the fact that here we have a great simcha which is being held in the Beis HaMikdash, and obviously it's a holy occasion, even though when we read the description in the Gemara Sukkah, how, for example, Yochanan and Zakkai used to throw torches into the air.
Torches.
And others would perform all kinds of acrobatics before the masses and so on. This was actually a sign of simcha. They wanted to express their joy. After all, it's written, Samachtum Chagecha, and so they would do these things. And of course, the entire area of the Beis HaMikdash was so lit up with torches and lights and lamps and everything else that even at a distance, everyone knew where Shalayim, that had practically like daylight over there. This is how great the festivity was. So they felt that the festivity is great, but still we have to bear in mind that it should not degenerate, you see,
into
a mingling of the sexes, right? So that should not be that way. All right, so good evening, Phil. How are you? All right, so the Gemara continues right now, and it says, Omer Rav Avo Adobar Avo. I'm starting from roughly about, let's say, about the 10, 12 lines in the top, okay? Rav Avo Bar Avo said, Noshim Chayovos Bekudesh Hayom. He says that women are required to participate in the Kiddush that we recite, okay? Now, of course, here he is probably referring to the Kiddush that we recite on Friday night or on the Yom Tov evening, okay? Because that, in reality, is the more important of the two Kiddushim. But nevertheless, we extend it as well also to what we call the Kiddush. Usually the title is Kiddusha Rabbah, which means literally the Great Kiddush. And why do they call it Kiddusha Rabbah? Probably because they want to give a little bit chizik, as we would say. They wanted to give a little bit encouragement to the Shabbos morning Kiddush, and so therefore they call it the Kiddusha Rabbah. And women are required to take part in that just as well as the men are. Now, as I explained last week, what it means for practical purposes is this. First of all, if a woman has a husband to recite for her, then she is yotze in fulfilling the mitzvah by listening to her husband and answering her name. As I mentioned a couple of times in the last few weeks, we have a principle which is enunciated in the Gemara Sukkah of Shomea Ke'oine, which means that if a person listens to the bracha and he answers Amen to it, then it's as if he himself had participated in the actual bracha itself. This is the reason why our sages feel, for example, it's important that if you're eating at the Suras Mitzvah, while everybody should wash, but one person can be Motzi, everybody there, by reciting the Hamotzi for everybody. In other words, he can enable everybody to fulfill their obligation. But you know, since many of our dinners over here, this one watches, this one doesn't watch, so under those circumstances, it's probably better to do what we are doing, namely that each individual recites the Hamotzi. And particularly this is true if people simply sit down without the intention of eating as a group itself. But if you eat, it's a great big group, then one person can actually recite the Hamotzi on behalf of everyone by answering Gomein. So you have fulfilled the obligation. The same thing would be true as far as, number one, let's say, benching after the meal. One person could recite the entire Birkas HaMazon, and if all the participants in the meal, want to be yotzei with that person, then they could do it on this principle of Shemeya Kareina.
Never see that, though.
Pardon me?
Never see that thing. Nothing.
I've seen it done. I'll tell you where I saw it done. One of our recent trips to Israel, we happened to come across a group of French young men and young women. These were people who were very active in Jewish youth organizations in France. Some of them may have been also from Morocco, because Morocco and France have very close ties one to another, and that includes the young people, all right? But anyway, these were French-speaking young people, and they had come to spend some time in Israel in order to learn dinim and to learn Hebrew better, so that they could go back to France and serve as teachers, as youth workers, or whatever it may be. So we were in a place called Katif, where both our group and their group had lunch together. All right, now naturally we benched for ourselves, but they, as a group, one person was, might say, the entire group, and what they did is to join in, in some of the responses. Some of them apparently have become international melodies, like Hazan Esoelam and things like that, and let's say Yosef Shalom and things like that, in the benching, which, originally...